Blog Talk Radio.
Going into the corner, Gordie Howe goes in to fight for it. He and Zygenkov have it. Back to Walt, not in front. Here's Bobby Hull, shoots good! Bobby Hull!
Juneau trying to make a play. Lemieux steals, and he's up against Raymond Bork and Adam Oates. Coming to the Bruins, they got around both men. Cutting for the net, he's in on goal. Hey! Charlton scores! What a goal!
Brunet carries in, rolling in front of the net, shot! Desjardins following the play, and he misses the short shot. Here he is again! Scores! Desjardins!
Hockey fans, you're listening to the hard-checking, kick-saving, sudden-death scoring NHL Breakdown. I'm your host, Scott Levy, joined as always by George Kurtz of RotoExperts.com. We're bringing you all the on- and off-ice action, as well as keeping you fans and you fantasy owners fully informed at the top of your respective leagues with our fantasy reports, including the IR, line updates, goalie report, and waiver wire recommendations. Today is, of course, Monday, October 22nd. Finally, the season feels like it's starting to take a little bit of shape, starting to get along after some a little bit of a slow, bumpy beginning with that kind of weird schedule that we've had a bit to start the season. But, you know, everybody is pushing that 10% mark of the season, about eight games into the season. So we're really starting to at least really feel more confident in seeing what we have. It's still early. It's still the beginning. I do say generally it takes a good dozen, 15 games before you really start settling in. But, you know, right around this part, like, we're starting to see some things. So certainly we could start investigating them more than just, hey, this is just a first blush look or a vague first impression. And, George, I guess one of the places I would like to start with you before we jump into the fantasy reports is, you know, a lot of people said, including us, Montreal and Ottawa were going to be absolute tire fires. I mean, not just bad, but epically bad, that these two teams are destined to be in the bottom five. And I'm not even necessarily saying that I don't think they still won't be that low in the overall standings, but here in the first seven games for each of those teams, they both have four wins. They're both above 500. Now, again, I'm not saying that or suggesting that, ooh, we're seeing the beginnings of teams that can necessarily push for a playoff spot or a wild card spot, but I guess one of the reasons why I want to start with them in terms of looking at teams and giving a sense of what we got is that I'm just wondering if you think that this has a chance to not be as bad a tire fire, so to speak, as we originally predicted. You know, like I said, not saying that they're going to make the playoffs, not even saying that they're going to be there at the trade deadline, that they'll be on the bubble. But, I mean, I don't know about you, George, but I thought Montreal in particular was going to be ugly, you know. And I'm just saying I don't see the ugly. I'm seeing actually some competitive hockey and at least a semblance of some, you know, reputable scoring there, you know. And the same thing for Ottawa. I mean, certainly I think you can call Ottawa under the guise of or under the heading of, you know, they're playing hard most of the time, even if they're playing flawed hockey. So just your first, you know, thoughts on that, that now that we've seen a handful of games, do you think maybe it won't be as bad in those two places and maybe the future of a realistic playoff team isn't 3-5 years away, maybe it's 2 years away? Are you seeing any of that, or is this still too early to get ahead of yourself to make any of those propagations? George, what do you think of Montreal, and what do you think of the Senators so far?
Well, depending on how you want to phrase this question, it's these are the questions most people can't stand. It's 2.5 weeks into the season. If one of these teams had to stretch in the middle of January, no one would be talking about it. No one would care. But because it's in the beginning of the season they're doing it, oh, maybe they're not as bad as we thought they were. Yeah, they are, and they will be. But they got off to a nice start. Good for them. The NHL's scheduling so far has been strange, to say the least, as far as it's not having a lot of games all at once, and maybe that's the benefit to teams like Montreal or the lesser teams in Ottawa, playing some teams that maybe aren't crisp yet, if you want to go in that direction there. In Montreal, I can sort of see it because, as I like to say, NHL hockey is all about the goaltending. If Carey Price is back to being Carey Price, then they won't be a dumpster fire. They won't be. part of the reason we thought they would be a dumpster fire, tire fire, whatever little soundbite you want to use there, is because Carey Price played like crap last year. But if he's back to being the Carey Price, the one that's making $10.5 million a year, then they'll be respectable. Not a playoff team, but respectable. You won't be able to walk all over him because he's not going to get up 5-6 goals a game. If you can keep teams between 2 and 3 goals, you can have a lot of close games. Some of those games will go Montreal's way. But I think the one thing that's surprising about Montreal right now is this team is skating. I mean, they're skating well. They're fast. So I think they're catching teams off guard right now. I think that's also something that plays into it. Right now, because everybody, it wasn't like you and I just thought this, everybody and their mother thought Montreal and Ottawa were going to be bad teams. So teams may be taking them a little lightly. You know, and once again, it's 2.5 weeks in. That will change as the season rolls along here. So is Zima team going to be a playoff team? No. Are they going to be lottery teams? Absolutely. It's a matter of how bad the lottery they're going to be. They're certainly some of the worst teams in the NHL. You know, and listen, you can go on the other side of this coin, too. Florida's going to get better. You know, they're not, right now, are they 1-2? They've won one game. You know, but they're going to get better. They're not that bad a team. Just off to a slow start. It's something we wouldn't be thinking about or talking about if not for the fact that it's the beginning of the season. Everybody overreacts to things at the beginning of the season. It's something I've had to do to Met fans in baseball. Met fans always go, oh, in April, because generally I don't like the way the Mets team are built the last couple of years. In April and May, they're yelling at me, oh, you're wrong. It's a long season, boys and girls. Long season. Things are going to change. And then by August, I don't hear from those Met fans anymore when that team is done because they couldn't survive the injuries. They couldn't survive the long season. Same thing here. Nothing's changed. You know, this is not football where getting off to a 4-1 start can propel you to a playoffs. In hockey, it's always good to win games, but it's October. It's a long season. You've got to be able to withstand the rigors of that, of it's a marathon, of the long season, survive the injuries, make the right moves. And I don't think either one of these organizations is built to do that. So they'll have their issues here. It's good for the fans. Maybe it gives the fans some hope here, you know, that these teams aren't as bad. And maybe they're not as bad as we thought. But neither one's going to make the playoffs. And I don't think either one will even be in playoff consideration come February. There'll be sellouts. You know, teams looking to sell their players for draft picks and prospects. I have little doubt about that.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely agree with your assessment here. And my thing and my question wasn't to even suggest that these teams might be, realistic playoff teams, because I still don't think they want. It really is just, you know, because usually if you're a regular listener to the show, sometimes I sort of set these questions up, you know, for George in the positive or negative to maybe, like, trick him a little bit. Or not necessarily trick him, but, like, you know, make you listeners think I'm going in one direction where I'm really going in the other. Yeah, I completely agree. These teams are going to be bad. They're definitely non-playoff teams. You know, once we get to the All-Star break, I don't expect them to be in contention. But really was, genuinely, I guess, for lack of a better term, and I really mean lack of a better term, I'm sort of impressed that both of these teams are not tire fires, at least as of yet, because I really thought it was going to be pretty ugly for both of these teams, George, from the get-go. You know, certainly when it comes to Montreal, you're absolutely right. You know, it's all about Carey Price. You know, I don't think any of us are expecting the Vezina Trophy-level player that he was a few years ago, but if he's playing the better half of that, you know, closer to that than how bad he was last year and the injuries in the last couple of years, then this team, as you said, George, it's going to keep him in a lot of games. You know, a couple of weeks ago, a week and a half ago, we were talking about how Shea Weber was skating in full gear. Now, that's not to suggest he's, you know, that much closer to coming back than the Christmas date we were looking at, but suddenly now we're thinking maybe Thanksgiving isn't completely out of the realm of possibility, and then you get, you know, you have your Price that's playing more like we're used to, and Shea Weber comes back, and if he can be a factor, suddenly, again, I'm just saying you could sort of see where this team isn't going to be a complete train wreck, you know, and they can be competitive, and that'll give those the forward lines times to really sort of mesh itself out because, George, again, I'm not saying anything exciting for here, but, you know, I know they're just about 5 games together, but putting Max Domi and Drouin together, you look like you have a little life there. Tatar looked like, at least here in the early going, that he's looking to redeem himself of a disappointing year and a half, maybe two years. You know, and Gallagher is a player in your top 6. You know, suddenly you have some pieces that long-term looks like it might have some legs to it, you know, on top of some of those younger players that have been playing on the back line, like Met, like Juleson. So it gives me a little bit of hope for the long-term future. Again, not saying for this year, not saying that this team's going to be a factor in the playoffs, going to sneak in and steal around or anything like that, not remotely. flipping it over to the Ottawa Senators. George, I do think this is going to get a little bit ugly as the team goes by. I just think you have, you know, a certain amount of youth here that is going to sort of hit the wall, particularly on defense, that have started off unbelievably well. And that's great. You know, Lajoie and Chabot, certainly the two guys that think even coming to mind, it's hard to see how they won't sort of hit the wall, but it's been a very nice, encouraging start. You know, Formenton had an outstanding preseason, and, you know, he hasn't put up any points, but he's just coming back into the lineup. You know, he's looking like he might be really a player. Tkachuk, before he went down with the injury, was looking good in his first, you know, 4 or 5 games that he played. Colin White, not too much production, but I'm seeing something there. So, again, it gives me hope for the future, although, like I said, I don't think it's for this specific year. It's as quite as rosy, not that I made it all that rosy for the Montreal Canadiens. But I think some of those kids are going to hit the wall sooner than later. The reality is going to catch up on some of the veterans that started off kind of nicely, like a Zach Smith, you know, in particular. But again, just considering what we expected before the season started, it's nice to see, like, it's not going to be ugly or really ugly. All right, let's turn our attention to the IR and line support in Anaheim. Ryan Getzlaf did indeed come back over the weekend, and even if you're in a daily lineup league, it probably would have been smart to follow George's regular suggestion of not shoving somebody back in the lineup right after coming back from injury. It didn't look too good. I know Coach Carlisle said he really didn't like what he saw from the Anaheim Ducks in their back-to-back losses this weekend. Really was jumbling up the lines, and Getzlaf playing really fourth-line minutes. And I think that's partly because he's not 100% healthy coming back. You know, so you're sort of taking your chances here, putting him in the lineup at least in a weekly league. I do expect him to be playing back with at least Raquel sooner than later. I do expect it the next game, but it might be a game or two before you see that. But if you have a better option at center, fantasy-wise, you might want to play him this week. Obviously, if you're in a daily lineup league, you can sort of make that call day of. Also, for the Anaheim Ducks, he is skating with the team and playing with them and practicing with them. Once again, it looks like he's about a week and a half away from returning. Silverberg also looks like he is about another week away from returning for the Anaheim Ducks as well. In Boston, McAvoy, a suspected concussion. We don't have confirmation on that, but he was sent back to Boston to have the doctors look at him. So it seems more likely than not he's listed day-to-day, but do expect him to be out for at least a couple of weeks for the Boston Bruins. Also for the Bruins, back if with a there's some conflict here in terms of information. Some is saying that he is just sick. Others saying that it could be a possible concussion for him as well. Listed as day-to-day at the moment. For the Boston Bruins, Buffalo Sabres, moving on to them, shifting up the top line, and at least in the first two games since they did it, it has looked good. Skinner and Pommaville moved up to playing on the top line with Eichel, and they got 12 points combined in their first two games together. Now, obviously, Eichel and Skinner are going to be highly owned in fantasy leagues already, but Pommaville only 5% owned and 4 points in the first two games together. Now, I'm not just saying run out and get Pommaville because I'm not confident that this will stay together. If you're looking for a short-term fix, maybe for just this week or a couple of games, all right, sniff around Pommaville if you don't have something better on there. But we've seen this before with Pommaville the last couple of years where he'll show a 2 or 3 week stretch of what he looked like 5 and 6 years ago and then disappear. So I'm just sort of saying pump the brakes there. But keep your eye on it at the same time. If it does stick, it has some potential fantasy possibilities there. In Colorado, JT Comfear with a concussion lands him on the IR. And pretty good news coming out of Columbus. Seth Jones, it has been confirmed, will return tomorrow for the Columbus Blue Jackets, back at least 2 to 3 weeks earlier than a lot of people expected, and should be a boost for both fantasy owners and the Columbus Blue Jackets themselves. In Dallas, Radulov with the lower body injury is expected to play on Tuesday. That is what Coach Montgomery said. It's not confirmed for 100%, but it does look very, very likely. In Detroit, the comings and goings on that defense, DeKeyser with that hand injury has indeed landed on the IR. And Mike Green, working his way back from that liver issue, is starting to skate with the team as well, but is realistically another 2 to 3 weeks before he returns. And that's really what we expected. It's really more of an update of that things seem to be on schedule with him. And then if you are desperate for an offensive defenseman, somebody to keep an eye on for your fantasy league if you need to plug that hole when he returns. In Edmonton, Ty Ratty with an undisclosed injury, but it has landed him on the IR, and he will be out a couple of weeks. In that time that he's out, at least to start off, Yamamoto will get the first shot at playing with McDavid and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins on that top line. Also for the Edmonton Oilers, bending an undisclosed injury landed him on the IR as well. In Florida, they continue to tweak that second line, looking for more consistent production. Malkin gets the shot once again with Trocheck and Huberdeau. Hoffman moved from the fourth line to the third line with McCain and Vetrano, so that's got to show at least a little bit of hope for Hoffman fans. In L.A., they're jumbling up the lines as well. Kopitar back in the lineup. We didn't expect him out that long with the illness, but he's being flanked by Toffoli and Eafalo and Carter, centering Kovalchuk and Rampel on the second line. They were together. Those combinations were together their last game, but it looks like they're keeping them together as they were together in practice today as well. For the New Jersey Devils, Zajac with a lower body injury is listed as day-to-day. He was skating after practice, as was Jasper Vatt. Brad, excuse me. Now, they don't have another game until the 25th this week, so it does, and the fact that, combine that with the fact that they didn't make a corresponding move to call anybody up, makes it look like there is pretty realistic hope that Zajac will return for their next game. Miles Wood, who had been playing pretty well with Zajac, was skating with Zacha and Coleman while Zajac is out. For the New York Islanders, Eberle reunited with Barzal and Andrew Ladd, who recently came back. And as I said on our last show, Ladd's a guy keep your eye on because he started off good those first three games playing with Barzal. And, George, I just kind of want to ask you here with the Islanders line, is this a move that was long overdue? I mean, this is the one thing, and I know you can poke a lot of holes about the Islanders in the lineup, but starting the year, you know, not that I'm saying that Barzal and Eberle were world beaters last year, because they weren't, but they were very good together. Yes, a lot of that had to do with the fact that you still had Tavares and he got the main attention from defenders. But Barzal and Eberle did play pretty well together last year. I was a little surprised they didn't keep them together to start the year. I understand playing around on the left wing there, where he wants to play with Barzal, but that didn't quite make sense to me. So is this a reunion long overdue that makes a lot of sense to you and things can sort of revive Eberle, who's obviously started off very, very slow? Or is this kind of a meh kind of move that it doesn't really move you either fantasy-wise or in terms of watching this team on the ice-wise? George?
Well, Barry Trotz explained why he split the duo up, and you know, we see this a lot in the NHL, and I get for lesser teams. I'm not talking about the superstar teams, but for lesser teams. You and I have talked about it with Dallas and several other teams where you want to have two good lines rather than one great line, or what you perceive as one great line. Trotz looks at Eberle and Barzal as his two best playmakers, two best guys, puck handlers, skaters, whatever you want to call it. That's how he looks at them. So he wants to put one on one line, the other on the other line. In theory, it makes great sense. The problem is you still need the other two players that are on that line to play with them. And he needed that play to be the same player. Was it a gamble? Sure. One that I would have gotten on Trotz about? No, I get it. You want to sort of spread out the wealth here. You knew the Islanders were going to try some different things without Tavares. I've said it many times. As good as Barzal has been, what's he going to do as a top-line player against top-line defenders is going to be completely different. As good as Barzal was last year, teams are worried about Tavares. You know, top 10, top 15 player in the NHL. Barzal isn't there yet. So I understand what Trotz did. It ended up not working, even though the point totals of Barzal are fine, but a majority of those points are on the power play, not 5-on-5. And that's what Trotz is worried about here. So he's put those two back together. Yeah. But once again, I don't get all caught up in lines. Right? Coaches change these things all the time, some more than others. You and I used to destroy Capuano for doing it pretty much every other period, or every other shift. You know, some coaches take days, some games, days, weeks, months, whatever it might be, but they all love to tinker. And this day and age of social media and everybody breaking down everything, they tinker even more. No one gets a chance to play with anybody very long if that chemistry doesn't seem to be there right away. then they move on to the next. It probably hurts the game in the end. In this case, though, Trotz knows what he has in Eberle and Barzal. They have worked together, and they have played well together. And the Islanders are struggling on offense right now. I know. But so I think that's where you're going with Trotz here. Put sort of get the known commodity back together, where it could be just a situation where, well, at least I have one line working. And you know, with the crash line of Martin, Clutterbuck, and Cizikas, well, now I know I have two lines working, so now I've got to fix the other two lines rather than have only the crash line working and nothing else. Now I've got to worry about three lines. So this could be a, you know, simple mathematics. By putting this together, at least I know I have two lines right, and I'll just have to fix the other two.
Yeah, I'd agree with that breakdown, and I think it gives, you know, it makes a lot of sense to me, and I think you do have that one line that should work well together and sort of, for fantasy owners, give at least a couple of players some streaming possibilities in shallower leagues and in deeper leagues, maybe some back end of your lineup potential in an Eberle or in an Andrew Ladd there. And frankly, and this still is a lot to be seen, you know, because I know not too many Islander fans or people in general, at least from a fantasy standpoint, are that excited in Brock Nelson, but I kind of want to see Lee and Brock Nelson together for a long stretch because I think they might work well together, play a more similar type of game in my mind, and they add Bailey to that, and, you know, who knows what you might get. I'm not saying I'm all excited for that second line, but fixing and making sure you get that commodity back that you were talking about that you know works together, I think makes a lot of sense for the Islanders. See if it makes any hay for fantasy owners as well. For the New York Rangers, just kind of a little bit of note here because it's not a lot to talk about in terms of their jumbling up the lines. That does look like Zibanejad and Kreider are starting to figure out together, playing more regularly together. They were split up, put back together. Last couple of games been looking particularly good. So again, some streaming possibilities for deeper leagues there if you need to fill your holes in your lineup temporarily. For the Ottawa Senators, as I mentioned earlier in the show, Formenton looks like he's returned. He hasn't been officially confirmed yet, but he has missed the last three games as practicing with the team. It does look like he'll be back in the lineup for their next game. For the San Jose Sharks, Thornton, just an update here, is still with his knee injury. He is going to be traveling with the team. That doesn't necessarily mean he's playing, though. In fact, there's an expectation he's going to miss at least one more game, but it could be up to 2 to 4 more games that he misses before he returns. Sort of a fluid situation here. And once again, as I've mentioned the last couple times, just look for a little bit of a domino effect here. And it's a little bit of an open question of what they're going to do. Certainly, Pavelski and Kane once again look good together, but they did start out the season liking Thornton and Pavelski together and Kane on a different line. My feeling is LeBanc is the one who gets bumped out, and they keep Thornton, Pavelski, and Kane together to see how that works, but that is pure speculation on my part. That is, I don't have any confirmation on that. Either way, it's a situation in where you have, you know, some players in that top six for the San Jose Sharks and look for some movement once Thornton does come back into the lineup. For the Vancouver Canucks, Peterson, with that concussion issue, did skate today and was listed to have a doctor's appointment for later today. It looks like him and the team will talk about him tomorrow. There is some whispers and speculation, and again, I stress speculation, that he could return sometime this week, as it does seem like he is progressing well, but they certainly want to go to the doctor's office to get some confirmation on that before they move ahead anyway, so look for that. For the Vegas Golden Knights, Alex Tuch, you might have heard over the weekend, re-signed with the team, a long-term extension with his lower body injury. He is back at practice, but in a non-contact jersey, so expect for him to be another week to 10 days away from returning, but also expect him to be in that top six when he does get to return on the second line with Pacioretty and Hula is my expectation. And then finally, in Washington, latest to get an opportunity on that top line right wing while Tom Wilson out is Damon Smith-Pelly, skating with Kunitsov and Ovechkin. All right, let's the IR and line updates report as it stands right now, turning our attention to the goalie report. And George, last couple of goalie reports, things trending in a more positive fashion. In fact, I'm expecting some more updates on recently returning goaltenders and soon-to-be-returning goaltenders from you, which, are, again, I would think is trending in the positive, but you got to start with what seems like the big bad news. But my question to you is, when it comes to Nashville and Rene, Do we have any idea? Is this a terrible news situation, or do we not have enough information to make that speculation just yet in terms of how bad the injury is for Pekka Rinne? And then by extension, is Soros a must pickup for either this week and long term, short term? Do we have any idea just yet? So, George, Goalie Report, what do you got to tell us?
Well, for those who haven't heard, Pekka Rinne suffered a concussion late last week, and he's out. Now, as with all concussions, nobody knows. You know, nobody knows. I know in going through the reports today, the first thing I saw was that they sent down Miroslav Svoboda. I'm like, oh, that's got to be good news then. You know, they sent down the backup goaltender. Maybe Rinne's at least able to back up. And then you realize, oh, that's because the original, their number one backup wasn't available last week. That's Grosnick. He was recalled. So really nothing has changed on Rinne. I doubt the Predators know when he's going to return, or that Rinne knows. He's in concussion protocol. He's got to get through all those cognitive tests and come back. As with always, we can say this about every concussion that's going to happen. It could be a day, could be a week, could be weeks, months. We don't know. Yeah, I'm not trying to spell all doom and gloom here. I'm just laying it out for you. I don't know. Predators, I don't think anybody knows. It's concussions. It's not a broken bone where you know it's 4 to 6 weeks. It's not a torn up knee where you know it's 2 to 3 months. They don't know. As far as I know, Rinne doesn't have a big-time concussion history. That's generally good news, but once again, not the end-all to be-all. Doesn't mean that he'll be back shortly. We don't know. Is Soros a must-pickup? Once again, it probably depends on your roster, your league, and do you need a goaltender? I would look at it like this. If there was no Rinne, if he was retired, Soros is just on his own here, he's likely to be a top-10 goaltender, top-12 at worst. So you're talking about a goaltender one. So that's how you should view him. A goaltender one just came on the roster. In your league, how does your waiver wire work? I mean, if you have a top claim, do you want to give it up? That would probably depend on your goaltending. If you have two good goaltenders, probably not. Or maybe you're in a type of league where the team that did claim him is a good team. And then you use your priority over that team to screw him over. Play defense here. That's all fair in law and fantasy. Can't say that enough, by the way. That's all fair. And maybe that's a good move. Maybe it's not, depending on, once again, that means you lost your priority now, but you get to screw over another team, the better team. Hey, keep the player away from him. Sort of happened in our league, where the first-place team had Rinne, tried to claim the backup, and I know it was you, who had a higher claim priority, and the first thing I thought of, Scott screwed him over. And I was happy about it because I'm chasing that guy too. And now his team is weaker. So, everything's fair in fantasy. There's all strategy involved here. Now, that being said, when I said you screwed him over, I didn't look at your goaltenders. Maybe you do need a goalie. I don't know. But either way, I was glad you made the move. I couldn't do it. He was ahead of me. But I did think about it. Bottom line is he's a goaltender one. So unless you're really strong in goal or you have really other needs where you don't want to waste that priority, maybe you have a wing you want or whatever it might be, I think you need to strongly consider picking up Soros. Granted, it could be a waste because, like I said, Rinne could be back Thursday for all we know, sadly. But for all you know, he's out 6 weeks. He's out till Christmas. We don't know. Bottom line is we just don't know. Other news. Schneider's on his that's Corey Schneider of the Devils. He had his first conditioning start in the NHL on Saturday. I think he gave up 4 goals. That's not the most important thing. The most important thing was that he came through it. Okay, came through fine, feels good. I expect him to be with the Devils or back with the Devils late this week, early next week at the very latest. And as you said earlier, just because he's back, I won't want to start him right away. Devils only have 2 games this week, so you're actually hoping he comes back this week. This way you probably wouldn't have started him anyway. You get to see him for a game or two. Kincaid all of a sudden is not playing as well, so that's good news as well. I mean, Schneider could get his starting job back right away, but it's where you get to see him, see what's going on here. Quick and Crawford came back last week. We discussed this on Friday. Quick has gotten shelled in 2 straight starts for his 2 less than, offensive powerhouses in the Sabres and Islanders there. That's got to be somewhat concerning, but he is back, and you're putting him in your lineup this week unless you have better goaltenders on your roster. And if you do, hey, God bless. Semyon Varlamov is going to start for the Avalanche tonight. Grubauer started a couple of games straight, but now Varlamov gets his shot. Chicago sent down Anton Forsberg, placed him on waivers to be sent to the AHL. No shock there. Just said Crawford returned, so Cam Ward's the backup, and Forsberg to go. Carolina, well, it sort of begins. All right, Mrazek starting. Scott Darling was activated. He was sent down to the AHL on a conditioning stint. Same thing what they're doing like the Devils with Schneider, which means Darling should be back probably within a week or two, and then they'll play the game. Mrazek, Darling, McElhinney, you and I discussed this on the Friday show about how generally it does not work to keep 3 goaltenders on your roster. Now ask Garcineau about that. So what are they going to do? Release one? Try? I don't see it. Try and trade one. I don't think there's any value there for any of them. So we'll see what happens there. Some good news. Luongo is skating with the Florida Panthers and will travel with the team. Florida has a 2-week road trip. There's only 4 games during that trip. They play the metro area teams, Islanders, Devils, and Rangers, and then they're off to Finland to play. I forget who they're playing in Finland. But he won't play, but he will travel with the team. So you're looking at maybe once they come back that he could play after that. Once again, it'll be a situation where, depending on the schedule, you probably want to see him in action first, but he should be back now from the looks of it. If you look at the timetable here, 2nd week in November. So finally some good news on Luongo. More Florida news. Hutchinson's starting again. Yeah, that's he'll start tomorrow night. That's 3 out of 4 starts for Hutchinson. And he's sort of taking over for Reimer there. They're not happy with Reimer's play. So keep that in mind there. If you're blindly starting Reimer this week, you probably don't want to do that. You're probably going to want to go in a different direction. I don't think I want to start Hutchinson either, mind you. Panthers as a whole aren't playing well. But now you got to worry about who actually is the starting backup goaltender there. New York Rangers are playing the backup goaltender game, which they send one guy down to get work and bring up the other guy. So Marek Mazanik was sent down. They called up Georgiev again, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't mean anything. Lundqvist is fine. That's the bottom line. He's the one you're starting there. And that's all we have here. So, like I said, the big news is Rene. We really don't know. Soros is most likely a pickup. You're talking about a goaltender one there. Schneider back maybe late this week. Luongo, 2nd week in November.
So, actually, even with the Rene news, not so terrible of a goalie report in terms of bad news. Mostly good news for that, especially if you don't mind having a sift through the Carolina Hurricane goaltending situation, which I think a lot of us don't really have to worry about, unless of course you're me, in which he's my third option at goal. But that's okay, and that's my problem to figure out. Anyway, George, you know how I'm going to follow up now, asking for any goalie recommendations for possible streaming this week, either low owned number one goalies or backup goalies that look like they might have some good starts. Obviously, when we think of that and backup goalies, we look at teams that are playing 4 games in a week, because almost always it means there's at least one back-to-back somewhere, so that's usually one of the best places to find one. We've got 5 teams this week with 4 games on their schedule: Chicago, Colorado, Edmonton, Vancouver, and Winnipeg. What goalies from those teams, or again, other teams where it might be, low on number one goalies, would you think would be some decent options to stream if you need to, say, cover some Rene starts and you missed out on Soros, at least for this week, or any other kind of goalie situation where you just need an extra goalie starter or two? So, George, who jumps out at you as good options to stream for this week?
Well, Soros is obviously your number one option. If he's out there, you go out and grab him. I don't think there's any doubt about that. We already broke that down, so we're not going to go through that again. But I'm not going to include Soros here. If he's out there, okay, he's by far your best option. Starting goaltender on a very good team, and he's a good goaltender. So he's the guy you want there. Once again, only 5 teams playing 4 games. I don't get it, Scott. I just don't. Are they trying to avoid the baseball playoffs? Are they worried about this? Is that why October is so quiet as far as the NHL? They only have over and over again. We say this every week. I don't get where they're worried about baseball. Can't be football, because football goes on for until December. You can't have 4 games a week till whatever. I'm just bitching here. Chicago, their back-to-back is over the weekend. Are they a good enough team that we care? Well, you're really going to want to go to Cam Ward. They play at St. Louis and Edmonton Saturday, Sunday. I wouldn't put this quite in a desperate category, but it's pretty close to that to go Cam Ward. Yeah, I'm hoping you can do better. Colorado, their back-to-back is Friday, Saturday, but I think Grubauer is owned in a big percentage of leagues, where he's not out there anyway. He's not a true backup, because coming into the draft, I think a lot of people were thinking, he's going to win the starting job, or they weren't sure who the starter was going to be coming in anyway. So Grubauer is drafted. If he's out there, he's another guy you want to grab, because he's more than just a backup guy. He is going to start games on his own. We saw that last week. There's a reason they acquired him and gave up what they gave up to get him to the Capitals, because they believe he's their future there. So he's the guy you should be grabbing anyway. So anyway, their backup is Ottawa, Minnesota, Friday, Saturday, so he'll definitely play one of those 2 games. Or he said they're playing Philadelphia. Varlamov's playing against Philadelphia tonight. They play Tampa Bay on Wednesday. Edmonton, I don't think we care about the backup there. I'm not going that direction. Vancouver, same thing. I don't think you care. Winnipeg, the former Edmonton backup, Laurent Brossoit, good chance he plays over the weekend, Friday, Saturday. Here's the problem. If you want to go this direction, and I don't blame you, because, listen, LB's playing pretty well. Winnipeg, we know, is a good team, but they got the tail of two teams they're going to face Friday's at Detroit. That's the team you want. You know, because Saturday is Toronto. I know Toronto's not playing so well right now. They've hit a little bit of a slump. I guess they weren't. They were never going to go 82-0. Go figure. But they're a little bit of a slump. But still, I don't want my bag of gold on the face of the Maple Leafs. Not if I can avoid it. So you don't know. I would assume, you know, if I'm a head coach, I'm more than likely I'm going to have my backup. If I'm automatically going to put a backup in that weekend, the backup's going against the lesser team, Detroit. You know, and then I'll put in my starter against Toronto. You got to figure hell of a buck because you got to figure, you know, I can beat Detroit no matter what. I can be in net and I can beat Detroit. You know, I know it's back-to-back, but Hellebuck gives me a much better chance to beat Toronto. So that's the way I would look at things. So I think he is one of the guys you want to add there. So anyway, the Soros Bar is your guy here. And as far as one thing I'll give you, if you're on a sell-high mode here, you might want to look around the league, see if you can sell Kincaid. Is it not playing very well? Schneider's on his way back. Kincaid did play well at the beginning of the season. You know, so maybe there could be some trade value there, especially to the Schneider owner. You know, maybe the Schneider owner also wants to cover himself. Scott and I, in our league, Scott, don't call me. I have no interest in Kincaid, and I am the Schneider owner. But in some leagues, you might find somebody who is interested in Kincaid, and it'll give you something. You know, if you get anything for a backup goaltender, I like Kincaid, but I don't think he's a starting NHL goaltender. I think he's a very good backup NHL goaltender. But the fantasy owner may want to cover their bases, especially if you're in one of these leagues where you have, you know, more than four reserves. You have eight reserve spots with guys who would keep, you know, sort of a handcuff to their goaltender. Then you might want to contact that owner. Maybe you can get something. Maybe it's just a fourth defenseman or whatever it is. Better than nothing.
Well, you just killed my follow-up question I had for you on the air of Kincaid, but I suppose I understand, and I suppose I'm not all that surprised by your response. Well, before I let you go, George, transitioning into the sort of skater recommendations, I just want to bounce a thought off of you before I let you go. In terms of owning a guy, much like owning, I kind of find this question similar to like a 1A, 1B kind of goaltender. Because, you know, JT Miller is obviously somebody who was widely drafted in a lot of leagues, and shallow leagues, not just deep leagues. After all, he played so well on the top line with Stamkos and Kucherov at the end of last year, put up some great numbers, and a lot of people felt that would sort of stick. In the first couple of games of the season, he was there, and then that line shakeup after like two games of the season has him in the bottom six, and therefore his ownership percentage plunged. And for good reason. He's not in the top six. He's not playing with players that are nearly as good. But here's the thing, George. In the last five games, you know, even though he's been dropped in the lineup, he's still on the number one power play unit. And in the last five games, he's got two goals and six assists for those power play points. So I think you know where I'm headed here. With the idea, is this a guy who's still appealing, especially in a standard league, 10-team type of league? Obviously, deeper leagues are different things because you have more room on your roster to take sort of more fringy type of players. But he's obviously not playing in the top six, not playing with nearly as good players, but he's still getting that power play time and at least here early in the season putting up points. So if you're in a standard league, is this a player who's still appealing to you, or there's still too many questions here whether what kind of consistent production he'll put up that makes him at least a little bit less appealing? I understand that, everybody's team is different, everybody's league is different, so that sort of might affect the answer here. But just talking in broad strokes, does this give you a lot of pause, having a player who's not in the top six but is looking like a power play specialist? Is that somebody who you're going to be less likely to keep on your team? George?
You know, with your parameters, 10-team league, probably not. You know, once again, you could have categories that are, you know, power play goals, power play assists, power play points, for all I know, and which makes what he does more valuable. But in standard leagues, probably not. I mean, I like JT Miller. And the problem is, it's not him. The problem is, it's the Lightning. There's too many good players here. I mean, if you want to move JT Miller up, and I do believe he should be moved up when you look at the lines, but who do you move down? I mean, look at Yanni Gourde, Braden Point, Stamkos, Kucherov, Johnson, Palat, who's playing very well all of a sudden. Who are you taking out here? You know, I guess Palat is the odd man out. This is one of the reasons why I say I don't really worry about lines all that much, unless it's been stable for, you know, weeks upon weeks. Then I worry about them. Most coaches are going to tinker. But in this case, it's hard because there are so many. He's got to replace a good player. You know, it's not like he's been demoted because he wasn't playing well, because the coach trying to make a statement or whatever it is here. It's because, you know, somebody good's going to have to be out of the top six, and that's a problem. And right now it's JT Miller. You know, maybe it's because Miller, you know, was traded from the Rangers. He wasn't an original Lightning, whatever you want to call it. So the Lightning feel they owe more towards the guys who were brought up to the organization. Whatever. You know, that does happen. You know, it's a tricky situation. I write a column each Monday. I'm actually writing it now for Roto Experts. Now, it deals with football, but the column is about trading. And the gist of it is I'm asked to list three players you would buy low, three players you would sell high, three players you would hold, and three players that have no value. So when you started asking about this, the first thing I started thinking of was, well, where would I put JT Miller here? You know, he could be considered a buy low because, once again, you know, sometimes when you're trading, I'm not talking when you're trading with people who really pay attention. Like, I wouldn't bring this up to you. But I don't know who owns JT Miller. Maybe you do own JT Miller in our league. But assuming you don't, and I was assuming with somebody who was maybe not on top of hockey, yeah, what I would bring up if I wanted him, just what you said, he's playing on the fourth line. Man, he just doesn't have any value. I just scored a couple of goals now, but the value's not there. Playing on the fourth line. And maybe you can get him for a lesser price. But I'd have to be thinking there that, A, the power play numbers will stay the same, and, B, that he is going to eventually get a top six spot. You know, that's the idea. That's why he's a buy low, because I think he's going to move up. And the other person may not believe that, or may not, whatever. And that's the idea of buying low, to be able to sell that. You know, and have the other person believe it. You know, so that's why every player does sort of get put into a category of what he is. JT Miller, I'm not so sure he's a buy low, but I do like the player. You know, and I think on most teams he would have a top six role. It's just that the Tampa Bay Lightning are loaded that, you know, it's almost like you're going to pay Rob Peter to pay Paul. Because even if you did move him up, that means somebody else is going to have to move down. What is Yanni Gourde not going to be a top six player? You understand what I'm saying here? Either way, someone's going to get screwed here. That's the problem good teams have.
You know, I really love the context that you put it. Obviously, you know, you answered the direct question that I had that, hey, in a standard league, looking at the situation right now, he doesn't look like he's the best option to keep on your team. There's too many question marks, but when you sort of colored it in there, you know, because I tend to agree with you. I can't see JT Miller being in the bottom six this whole season. Palat is a guy, you know, it's interesting because even when Palat doesn't produce points, they seem to like him, you know, in that top six. Most of the time, partly as a guy who's going to go into the dirty areas, dig out the puck for the more, talented guys on his line. So that's one of the things that keeps him in that top six. But he does seem like the obvious guy to eventually move out, either him or Tyler Johnson, because they seem to sort of like moving Tyler Johnson around the lineup a lot those last couple of years. So I agree with you that if you're in a more competitive league, and particularly a deeper league, like a 12-team league, it sort of changes the color there, that he's more lineup worthy, you know, maybe not starting lineup, but certainly on your bench worthy in deeper leagues, and he is a candidate and a good candidate to possibly buy low. But you have to sort of, you know, approach it. If you're going to try and do that buy low thing, as you already laid out, George, you have to understand the reality of it. So you also don't want to overpay for that buy low at the same time. All right, George, thanks for your feedback on that. I'll let you go, and we'll talk to you later in the week as we turn our attention to the rest of the Skater options and recommendations for today's show. Starting with those teams that do have four games this week, you know, actually, I kind of like, you know, all four of those teams, you know, at least to a certain degree from an offensive standpoint. You know, Chicago, you're playing an Anaheim team that is sort of seeming to slip and slide, whether it's because of the injuries or not. They haven't been playing that all that well the last few games. Then you're playing a flawed New York Ranger team, a St. Louis team that also hasn't quite figured it out, an Edmonton team who seems to be coming around, but you could score on, so it might not be my first choice. Chicago doesn't bother me with sort of streaming some players. I have a couple of decent options, at least I think, to recommend to you in a moment or two. Colorado, again, they've been playing better, and they've got a pretty decent schedule. You know, of their four games, Tampa Bay certainly looks like it would be pretty different, difficult. But you're playing Philadelphia and Ottawa, two teams that you should be able to score against. Minnesota, sort of been up and down so far this season, so I don't dislike them. The Edmonton Oilers seem to be sort of playing a little bit better the last three or four games. They have a tougher schedule, but again, if it sort of fits and one of their better players is available to you, it might be interesting. The Edmonton Oilers are playing Pittsburgh, Washington, and Hope, then on the road for Nashville and Chicago at the end of the week. So they'd probably be my least likely team to stream from. The Vancouver Canucks, Washington on the road to Vegas, on the road to Arizona, and Pittsburgh doesn't seem ideal either. But, you know, if there's a player or two there that's particularly hot, which there might be, I'll tell you about in a moment, then it could be interesting. But certainly the best choice to stream from would be the Winnipeg Jets. Playing St. Louis and Toronto at home before playing Detroit and Toronto on the road. So at least three of those four games, not all four, should be pretty good to stream some offense out of. And then even looking at the teams that have the standard three games weeks, Boston playing Ottawa, Philadelphia, and Montreal, that could be a possibility, especially if you wanted to take a chance on maybe somebody on that second line like a Heinen. He's not a recommendation for this week, but he is back playing on the second line with the Brusque and with Krejci. So if you were going to take a certain flyer, that might be interesting. Also, the Carolina Hurricanes playing Detroit, San Jose, and the Islanders this week are also appealing to me. And the Islanders playing Florida, Philadelphia, and Carolina are also pretty interesting as well as teams to stream from. As far as specific player recommendations, probably my biggest recommendation for this week would be from the Vancouver Canucks, Bo Horvat. The Vancouver center is only 40% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo leagues. But in the last seven games, 5 goals, 1 assist, 3 power play points, averaging 2.5 shots per game, and they have the 4 games this week, even though it's not the easiest schedule. You know, again, 3 of those teams in Vegas, Arizona, and Toronto, you should be able to do reasonably well with offensively, even with Vegas playing a little bit better as of late. I did sort of ring the bell on warning about JT Miller, but the Tampa Bay center right wing player, at least that's what he's eligible for in Yahoo leagues. Ownership percentage is about 48% on ESPN and Yahoo on average. That has significantly dropped about 25-30% in the last few weeks, as we discussed for the reasons why. But as I said, in the last 5 games, 2 goals, 6 assists, 4 power play points, playing on that number one power play unit, which doesn't look like it's going to be changing. You're playing Colorado, Vegas, and Arizona this week. He could be a decent option. As I said, I'm kind of intrigued, especially if I'm in a deeper league with Chicago. You've got a couple players in that top 6 that could be of use for you, at least for a short-term stream, with Nick Schmaltz moving over to the left wing, with Anisimov joining that line with him and Patrick Kane, center left wing eligible player, at least in Yahoo leagues, is only 22% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo leagues, and he's got 6 points the last 7 games, a goal and 5 assists with a power play goal. As I said, playing on that second line this with Anisimov and Kane, and he's got 4 games this week. But also Khan playing on that top line with DeBrincat and Taze, he's also playing well after going scoreless the first couple of games. The Chicago center, left wing and right wing eligible player, at least in Yahoo leagues, only 4% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo. Last 6 games, a goal and 4 assists, really starting to come around after a slow start. And if you're looking for a defenseman, Josh Morrissey of the Winnipeg Jets, the defenseman's only 43% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo leagues, but in the 8 games this season, he's got a goal and 6 assists, 3 power play points, playing 4 games this week. One of my favorite schedules this week to stream from, and then even bleeding it next week, playing back home at home against the Florida Panthers, who, as George mentioned earlier, is struggling so far to start the season. And he actually sort of could be a nice long-term option, not just a streaming option. He is a player that I sort of have as a defensive breakout player this year. So I like him a lot to not just stream, but to keep on your roster long-term. All right, folks, that's all that we have today. Have a good hockey week, everybody. We'll talk to you on Friday.